Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
It's time for the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Now, broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
When the world was a time of this and that, I was young, didn't know to hold it back. Now we're here in the world, something else. We can leave any day and call for help. We were guides, nobody was above me. The A on my chest like a Dolce. The A on my chest, put your fist up. The A on my chest like a chipmunk. Alvin, Theodore, breathe.
Welcome into the show. It's Monday, back from the weekend. I mean, I can pretend like I did something, but I didn't. I just watched a disappointing weekend. If we're talking about local sports, the Rockets get swept over the weekend. They lose Monday. Excuse me, they lose Friday. They lost yesterday. The Astros lose 2 out of 3 to the Rangers. Brian Presley was awful in one. You can see the sigh of relief yesterday after he got out of there with a clean inning. Almost, he looked to the skies and pretty much said thank you after a couple of nice defensive plays. And this thought and this question I asked in the previous show, and it keeps crossing my mind: where would we be with the Astros if Ronel Blanco didn't exist? Like, if he wasn't the story of the season for the Astros, how miserable would this season be going right now? Exclude the no-hitter. Like, great. But the wins at this point are even bigger than just, oh, he threw a no-hitter, because he's got 2 out of their 3 wins. He's been dominant in his starts. He's given the Astros a chance to win, even in a game last night where Yordan hits a 3-run homer. That was it for the offense. They were done after that. So if he is like most Astros starters this year, they probably lose that game when you consider Hader couldn't get through an inning clean. If we are trying to find clear positives, they begin and end with Ronel Blanco. Sure, Altuve's good. He's always been good. But as far as the surprises and what we can be thankful for, I don't know if there's anyone more responsible for any positivity regarding the Astros than Ronel Blanco. And the problem with baseball is you can respond with anything with, oh, it's a long season. All the pushback you need is it's a long season, and everyone goes, you know what, you're right, it is a long season. What can I say to that? 162 games means anytime you say that until probably July, you are right. So anyone who feels like this Astros season will turn around, and you're right to believe that because history suggests that it will, you just tell me it's a long season, and I'm like, you know what, you got me. But you can't tell me it's been good the first 10 games. You can't tell me you feel good about watching this team. Because normally, at this time of the year, the Rockets are done for. Now they are done for. We'll get into that. But we think about the Astros and go, this is my respite. This is a team I'm going to watch after whatever has happened during the day and go, I'm going to get to watch my team play and feel good about it. I don't feel that way watching them play. I'm hoping and praying they find a way to win a game. And sure, it can change because, Sean, it's a long season. That feeling can go away quickly. But right now, like, Fromber's your ace right now. Verlander pitched on this very station. Oh, 92.5, excuse me. He pitched for the Space Cowboys yesterday. Didn't go great. He was asked about the rash of injuries in Major League Baseball. We'll get into that. He has some thoughts. Very eloquent, Justin Verlander. Maybe get some outs, though. Maybe get some guys out. That would help the cause. Now, he's just working on stuff. I get it. There's always a caveat for baseball.
He felt good.
Yeah, felt good. Didn't pitch particularly good. Well, the word is well. I would have used good, but that's not proper English. He didn't pitch particularly well, and some of the reaction shots of him giving up hits and runs, he didn't look like he felt good. But at least he came out of it uninjured. But do you feel all hyped about watching the Astros? Well, this is the wrong show for this, to be honest with you, because we have stated we don't really care until July. But I would like to go into games feeling like I don't have to worry about the team and hope they're and know they're going to win. Even with Fromber, as I get back to that, even with him going tonight, I'm not sure there's going to be a good outing.
I would say that I find the Astros very interesting.
They are.
Which is like, you know, normally they're not very interesting. They're just very good. Or they're kind of interesting. But the early in the season, the first 10 games are normally not like, man, like this is kind of a must-win game. Like, wow, they really need this one. You normally don't feel that watching the Astros. So yes, I do feel like it is interesting. And I want to disagree with you with one thing. You said Framber Valdez pitches tonight. He's the Astros ace. You could argue their ace pitched yesterday.
Yeah, there's true stopper. He does stop losing streaks.
That's what he does.
You are right. We talked about what Blanco did in his first start, stopping a losing streak. You know, they had lost four in a row.
The first four games,
and he ended that losing streak. Now they got their brains bashed in for different reasons in Arlington.
Yeah, it wasn't pitching then.
Yeah, he did. Eating at the pitch till the third games. They were outscored 17-4. We'll get into Presley's numbers before last night's outing. They were bad, and they have been bad until he pitches. Now, Fromber tossed one in there and pitched well, certainly, but Blanco's been their stopper. But Fromber is the ace in name before Verlander comes back. Maybe Blanco is that guy. Maybe he's a guy who's going to solidify himself in this rotation. Because if Hunter Brown's going to pitch the way he did, he can beat it. He can get out of the rotation. There's nothing performance-based that suggests Blanco shouldn't be in this rotation. But by name, Fromber is your ace. But I don't go into it thinking, well, we're going to get six strong for Fromber. I don't know.
Yes.
It could be 3 1/3 of miserable baseball. Not that he's going to be out and out terrible, but watching him fiddle around and walk guys and go from 0-2 to walking a guy, that stuff is possible too.
Yeah, it's definitely not like an ace level of performance and ease of performance.
Yeah.
It is like, man, got out a couple jams in that one.
It feels like it's on a knife edge all the time. That's what we've been dealing with.
And that's why the Astros are interesting.
They are interesting.
They're interesting.
They're not good, but they're interesting. And the hope is because, as I'll say again, it's a long season that they eventually will be good again. Someone who's not good is Alex Bregman. 6 out of 35 to begin the year. There was a thought on the previous show that could Caitlin Clark score more points in the NCAA tournament than Alex? And that would be higher than Alex Bregman's batting average in the month of April. He's got time, but you never know, and that's a problem. I think she's in like the 180 range or so as far as points, close to 190, maybe a little above it. And he is at a point where it's still up for debate. It is early. It is April. We know he always starts slow, but he can't. With this team struggling, we're going to need more. I don't know if at any point Espada will be more proactive and go, you know what, you are bad. We're going to drop you down permanently in the lineup. But the 6-35 isn't like in direct contrast to what Ronel Blanco's doing on the other side, where he was, what was it, 44 batters before he gave up a hit? And then, of course, it came to Adolis Garcia. Because why wouldn't he? He's an Astro ruiner, of course. But he ruins the hitless streak of Ronel Blanco. But setting records, and the best feeling and the best story of this team is a 30-year-old that wouldn't even be in this rotation if health didn't come into play. This is where we're at. 44 outs before his first hit was allowed are the most by a pitcher to begin a season in the expansion era.
Excuse me. The Astros are at the point where they don't just have a heartwarming story. The heartwarming story is kind of saving their season. That they like, wow, against all odds, look at him go. What a beautiful story. And he had a baby before the last, I guess it was spring training, but it was in Minute Maid Park.
He had a baby. He pitched well against the Space Cowboys, and Espada told him, you're in the rotation.
And then he throws a note. It's like a Disney movie.
Unfortunately, the Disney movie consists of a team that's awful. And Disney wouldn't even make this story because they would only have to pay attention to the team every five starts or be a miserable documentary or miserable movie, because who wants to watch a bad baseball team over the course of an hour and a half in movie form? Hell, I don't want to watch them over the course of two and a half hours the way sometimes it goes. And we'll see what Fromber does tonight. But Ronald Blanco, the story of the season and another good performance, and it shuts down the Rangers who had just bashed the Astros over the first couple games. So they have a chance for the split. If you feel confident about Fromber, you would be unique if you're on this show, because I don't know how much confidence there is, but he's good. He was great in his last outing. You just hope you get another performance like you did in the previous outing against the Blue Jays, because they need it. 3-7, trying to split the series against the Rangers. Try not to lose your second series in three. And not that the standings matter, but you just want to start stacking wins at some point, because you could be in a situation like we were last year, where you always assumed you'd catch the Rangers and eventually in the Mariners, and eventually you did. It just took to the last game of the regular season. We hope for that not to be the case. And I won't say it starts today, but it would help, if mostly because you want Fromber to put two good performances back to back, and maybe it is a precursor for a really good year after a shaky start to begin the year. So the Astros win. They got a chance to even the series tonight. The Rockets did not win. We'll get into that. We'll get into the official end to their play-in chances, although that probably ended when they lost to Dallas to start this losing streak. Now the losing streak is a real one, and we can almost forget the 11-game losing streak, because this team has stacked losses on top of each other to close out the year, and we'll see if they can finish above 500, which seemed like an almost certainty just about 2 weeks ago. Now we're really wondering about how this Rocket season will finish. We'll hear from Ime Udoka. Another Rocket got into a scuffle. This one led to another ejection. Amon Thompson is that Rocket. We'll hear from Ime Udoka on that, and we'll kind of go through what happened as the Rockets blew a big lead and lose to the Mavericks in overtime. You know, making free throws would help. We'll be back.
ESPN 97.5.
This is the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
Welcome back. We'll get into the Rockets here shortly, but I did want to talk about Ryan Pressly a little bit. I made reference to him kind of looking up to the sky and thanking whoever he prays to, I guess, for getting out of that inning last. I don't know who he prays to, Sean. It could be anyone. I don't know.
I have an idea.
I just put it that way because you never know.
Statistically, it's very likely.
You're guessing. But it's just you don't know, Sean. You don't know.
I guess I don't know.
But you can guess and make it certainly an educated one just by context clues, I guess you would say. But he looks up to the sky and has a sigh of relief after getting out of that inning, and rightfully so. This stat courtesy of the Astros Locker on Twitter. Ryan Pressly has allowed 6 runs in the last 2 2/3 innings pitched. He's allowed 6 earned runs in his last 38 postseason appearances combined. So needless to say, Ryan Pressly's had a rough go of it. He was awful on Saturday night, responded with a good outing last night. Of course, Josh Hader couldn't get out of the ninth inning without giving up a run. That is a Ryan Pressly save. You're up by 3, you give up a run, it's still a save, it doesn't matter, it didn't cost you anything, but you weren't good, which you could say that about plenty of the Astros bullpen. Hasn't been good, but it was enough because of Yordan's home run. They were good enough to get out of the last night's game with a win. So Ryan Pressly has struggled, did not struggle yesterday, which is good news, and who knows if it becomes a thing that leads to better pitching performances. But you take last night and go, thank you, we appreciate it. Hopefully some of it rubs off on Josh Hader going forward, because he has not lived up to the billing. But as we'll say all the time, it is still early. We can't jump to conclusions about the Astros. Well, we can't jump to, it's not even a conclusion anymore. It ain't early, it's late, and the Rockets are done in terms of competing for a play-in spot. They were up big yesterday against the Mavericks in a mid-afternoon game. They're up by 22 in the first half, and they're up by single digits going into the half. Kyrie Irving and Luka, just too much. The Rockets couldn't hold them off it looked like that game was going to be an inevitable blown lead where you're ruining the fact that the Rockets couldn't hold on until they made big shots in the fourth quarter and had the ball up three and got fouled. Now, Fred VanVleet missed free throws, but Jabari Smith missed the most important ones of the night. He misses two, gives the Mavericks life, and Dante Exum hits a three. There was a discussion about philosophy. And you watched it play out. If you were just watching a lot of NBA last night, you watched it play out in two different philosophies. The Rockets don't foul. It leads to an Exum three. The Pacers up by three, foul. The Heat go to the line, make the first free throw, try to miss the second on purpose, lane violation. The Pacers get the ball, game over. Difference of philosophies, difference of results. You could always ask, why would you ever allow someone to shoot a three? It's the only way you can lose a game. It's the only way. And, of course, Exum was open. He makes it. You lose. You tie. They tie. And then you go on to lose. I'm of the belief that, yeah, shooting a three to tie a game is more difficult than making one, than missing one on purpose, and then getting a rebound and a putback. Sure, those happen. But we see far more often you give up a shot, generally open. And it because everyone has a play for that situation. Everyone has a play, and they practice that to get a wide open three or at least an open look. How often are teams practicing the make one, miss one, get an offensive rebound to tie the game? I don't think they spend as much time on practice as the other scenario. And it costs the Rockets. And, of course, you can talk about Ime for – you can blame him for that. But, of course, the players were involved in missing the free throws is the killer. So it was just a calamity of errors for the Rockets, and they lose. And they're now completely out of the play-in mix. They're now two games under 500. But they are a team who likes to fight. Well, maybe fight strong. Let's just say they like to get into altercations, and they won't back down. The latest was Amen Thompson, if you missed it. It was the second of two physical altercations in a matter of probably 30 seconds with Maxi Kleber. On the offensive end, he tosses Maxi Kleber to the ground, and then he comes back on the defensive end and does the same. The refs reviewed both. They considered the second one a flagrant two. Amen Thompson gets thrown out of the game. And if you missed it, he didn't play in Friday's game because of an injury. He's back. So he was there for a good time, not a long time, if you want to call it that. And here's Ime Udoka discussing the ejection of Amen Thompson.
Nowadays, anything's a flagrant two. That might have been a normal technical 10 years ago. But, you know, they get in a bumping match, and if he's grabbed and gets the guy off him, like I said, it's a little soft nowadays. So you got to understand then, how they're going to call it.
We understand this Rocky coach is about that life. You call LeBron James a soft-ass boy, you're about that life. But I'm going to disagree. I understood that the game has changed, but it wasn't just, hey, get off me. It was a little high. Now you might say, yeah, I was aiming for his shoulder and the elbow rode up. It was a little high. And we know the rule. That was going to get you thrown out. I was hoping for a flagrant one because maybe the referees had my interpretation and he was aiming for his shoulder and then the elbow just kind of rode up because of physics. But the refs were like, you got to go. And Amen Thompson didn't come close to finishing that game. And it didn't seem like the Rockets were going to miss him until they couldn't get any stops. And it certainly seemed like they missed him.
Doing it twice is also.
Yeah, the back-to-back didn't help.
I don't know if the refs are supposed to, be like, the previous play that we didn't review and he did that, but.
Yeah, well, soccer does that. They'll give you a yellow card if they say, you committed like three fouls. Now, three of them individually doesn't add up to yellow, but you've done it a number of times in a row, so we're going to have to give you one. And I don't know if that was the case, but they were probably like, okay, he's already thrown him down twice. We can't let him stay in this game, or he might actually punch Maxi Kleber.
It's a little bit like it's a smaller scale version of the of what happens with Dylan Brooks, where every ref is like, hey, Dylan Brooks, I know your game, all right? I know you might not be getting up to it now, but I know what you normally get up to.
And it could happen at any point.
We're kicking you out right now. Like, yes, you grade someone's nuts, all right? You're out. Like, but we can't let you We can't give an inch.
We can't pretend like we didn't see it coming when it happens.
Yeah, like
we see what you're doing. You're on a path.
We're familiar with your game.
Yeah, unlike Shaq, we're familiar with your game. So Amen Thompson and the Rockets, maybe the refs are familiar with their game. It has been, now it was through the winning streak, and now it's through this losing streak. They will get into altercations. They will have guys thrown out. And now that they're on a five-game losing streak, maybe tone it down. Maybe, because if you get a reputation for it, you're going to be a target. And we know Dylan Brooks is a target. In fact, we'll get to it on the other side. He talked about how he's changed his defensive philosophy because of he knew the refs were paying too much attention to him, but he said he's going to get back to it. It's a little late now. I mean, you're 38-40. 4 games left. Now you want to get back to the defense you were playing before?
Is this like an off-season thing?
Yeah. Why the last 4 games? Are you letting the world know that when next season begins, we're getting the old Dylan Brooks back? Because this version of him, we don't need you for the next 4 games. It's over. Why do I care what defense you get to now? Who cares? Maybe body up Luka and knock him on the ground last night or in your previous meeting so he doesn't go for 22 points in the first quarter. Oh, I'm going to do it now. I don't care about it now.
Yeah.
Season's over.
Kyrie just scored 48.
Yes. It's too late for it now.
Maybe put him on his ass.
Yeah, at some point, maybe in the middle of the 2 Maverick games where you were watching their superstars destroy you, knock one of them on the ground and say, the old Dylan is back.
The villain.
Yeah.
Oh, you know what? It might be for the Olympics.
Oh, for Canada.
Yeah.
For Team Canada.
Maybe he's letting it known that, hey, I'm coming.
Whatever Argentinian international he knocks on the ground, he should have known. Dylan warned you.
Hey, Bojan Bojanovic, watch out.
I warned you in April that this Dylan was back. Unfortunately, this Dylan and the rest of the Rockets got no stops late, and really from the middle of the second quarter on, they got no stops, and it cost them. But as I said, what cost them most was the free throw misses and then the philosophy of not fouling. I'm sure there's a reasonable explanation for it, but if you box out on the missed free throw, you're probably going to win the game in the make one, miss one scenario. Instead, you gave up a wide open three, and it led to extra time, and you lost. So the Rockets now have lost 5 in a row, and the Warriors and the Lakers are your 9-10 in the Western Conference play-in scenario. And the Lakers got a chance to move up to 8 because the Kings have struggled. They've had injuries. The Lakers did lose last night to the Timberwolves, who are still fighting for the number one seed. So a promising month of March has turned into a less than stellar April, as the Rockets do get swept over the weekend, losing to the Heat at home in a game that they weren't really competitive outside of like the first 8 minutes. Once the Heat took a lead about midway through the second quarter, the Rockets, I mean Jalen Green hit a couple threes back-to-back in the fourth to make it a 6-point game, but after that, it was about over. Heat bounced back with a couple threes, and the Rockets didn't compete. So differing games where the Rockets were in control throughout, but in game 2 of the weekend and lost it, and then in game 1, outside of a spark to start the game, never really had control, and the Heat kind of just systematically beat them. And the Rockets season, now 38-40. Season's over. I mean, the hope is to stay above 500. They have the Orlando Magic coming up here. The Magic all of a sudden in a spot where they can get the 2 seeds. So that'll be a game that means something to them. We'll see how the Rockets respond with nothing on the table to earn outside of finishing above 500, which would be an accomplishment. Some people don't care because they bet the over and the Rockets are already there. But for the Rockets themselves, maybe a chance to get over 500. And that would be a good thing in Ime Udoka's first year, particularly in this soft-ass NBA that he has to coach in. I mean, so soft. Let's get over 500.
Imagine how good of a coach you'd be in the 2000s.
Where no one gets thrown out of games?
Yeah. Or I guess when he was a player, too.
Yeah. I think it's an era of basketball he would prefer. Defense, bad shooting, that's kind of his team right now. So I I think he would.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Imagine if this they weren't obligated to take like 33s a game.
Yeah, what if
play in 2024?
What if they could just what if everyone took mid-range jumpers to match the Rockets missing a lot of their shots? What if everyone was like that?
Jabari Smith, watch out.
No spacing. What if there was no spacing?
Throwing entry passes to Alperen Sengun.
How good would this Rockets team be?
This is a 2000s team. Just with 20-year-olds.
Yeah, Jabari's out here taking corner threes. We don't do that here.
Hey, pump fake, take two dribbles in, then shoot, all right?
Yeah, get the better shot.
That's the real NBA.
Turn down a good shot for the great shot, and the great shot is a 20-footer.
Ime Udoka at the end of season coaches meeting with all the players, the exit interviews. He just slides a VH1 tape of LaMarcus Aldridge. He was like, watch this.
Mm-hmm. You win in the mid-range, everybody. You win in the mid-range. If it's good enough for Kevin Durant, it's good enough for you. Unfortunately, Kevin Durant's a generational player, and Jabari Smith is just trying to find a role. But a disappointing end for him, you missed those two free throws, costly, and the Rockets go down. But, hey, take heart that this team, at least in the month of March, showed you what they're capable of. Of course, some of it I think I will couch by saying – you didn't even have what many consider your best player. So what does it mean overall? It just means you have a team full of fighters. And despite it looking like a lost season, they made it one where we cared and had meaningful basketball in the month of March and into April. So we'll give them credit for that. And we'll see how the season plays out over the final four games. We'll hear from Justin Verlander, who we believe is still an ace. It didn't look like that against minor league competition. He pitched for the Space Cowboys yesterday. We'll give you some of the numbers from his performance. We'll also hear from Verlander with his thoughts. He had thoughts about what is happening in Major League Baseball that's leading to all these arm injuries. And as you might imagine, he kind of put it on multiple things. We'll talk about that when we come back.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
We're taking a break.
Okay. That's cool.
You're listening to the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
Welcome back. I mentioned the Verlander thing. We'll get to that. But Sean brought up something a couple breaks ago. We were discussing something, and he said so much happened last night that it made him forget even really about the Rockets and the Astros. So if we were ranking the things that happened, because Sean, I didn't know this, he watched WrestleMania, said it's the first time he's watched it in years now. I didn't know WrestleMania was a two-night thing. I thought I had my fill of it the night before, then I got punched in the face with it on my For You page the next day, or last night, excuse me. You had that, you had the Astros, you had J. Cole apologizing to Kendrick Lamar for his diss that people didn't even think was very good. Said it hurt his heart. So J. Cole's out there apologizing. And I was thinking about that. Like in rap, that didn't go over well, the apology.
It did not go over well.
People
at
like,
all.
What are you doing? Because in rap, everyone likes a beef, particularly when it's of guys of that caliber. And then he's going to apologize. He was on stage. He was talking to the crowd saying, it's not who I am. That's my brother, blah, blah, blah. And people are like, stop it. Like you didn't even let it go for 2 weeks before your apology, not
for
even a
weekend
before your apology. You're apologizing over the weekend after you put out a project and went after Kendrick Lamar. So that was out there. I can't wait for all the, I'm sure that stuff is already out there. The rap podcasts and blogs and all the stuff going, J. Cole's not going to have a good time.
You mentioned I haven't watched WrestleMania before last night. I haven't listened to a full Joe Budden podcast before. Whenever the next full Joe Budden podcast comes out,
I mean that is something where sometimes they have Patreon exclusive stuff where they get into stuff they don't want the general public to hear. But I imagine this one, because they've talked about this particular back and forth, will be on one of their regular podcasts. The Joe Budden show discussing J. Cole apologizing will be one that people want to listen to. So that's a great pull by you. So which one had more impact on you? The J. Cole apology or was it Cody Rhodes, whatever happened with him? If, I don't know. I didn't watch any of WrestleMania.
So they spent all this time building up Cody Rhodes, son of Dusty Rhodes, building up to be a champion for the first time, something his dad never did while being in WWE, I guess F at the time, or WCW. But it's all this build up. He loses on Saturday night, which means that it's bloodline rules for Sunday night, which basically means just anything can happen at any time, just a free for all. And so as he's fighting Roman Reigns, different, like, whatever, Roman Reigns allies come out, start beating up Cody Rhodes. Then John Cena comes out to defend Cody Rhodes. Then The Rock comes in to fight John Cena. And then The Undertaker comes in to fight The Rock. I mean, it's just like literally they're just nothing but cameos of like the all-time great wrestlers. And then Cody Rhodes eventually wins to finish the story.
Yeah, you named The Undertaker. I was like, when's the last time does he only show up at like pay-per-views and the biggest ones?
To do one thing. Okay. Yeah. Like he did last night. Yes.
What do you think they're paying him to, if we're thinking of an appearance for The Undertaker? I'm trying to think.
$200,000?
The equivalent. Like, is he getting less per game than Caitlin Clark would get in the big three? Like, it was an 8-game, potential 10-game schedule for $5 million. Is he getting more per game, per, like, his appearance, would that equal one game, do you think? Or would she get more?
I can't imagine he's getting, like, $500,000 for what he did last night. Because literally what he did was the lights went out, he pops into the ring, lights come back on, he's in the ring. He choke slams The Rock.
The pop of getting The Undertaker to choke.
Lights go back out. Undertaker.
I don't know, man. That appearance fee's got to be pretty high, though.
I mean, for WrestleMania, too.
Yeah,
he probably
WrestleMania.
Some leverage in negotiation.
And maybe he gets part of the buys. I don't know. Whatever his deal is, The Undertaker showing up.
It made it worth it for him.
I was like, The Undertaker? What?
Yeah, I mean, go watch. I mean, you don't even really need to know the full story. Just, like, go watch the, like, 5-minute clip of when all, or it might be longer than 5 minutes. They do a lot of reacting where they're just like staring at each other for 10 seconds.
Okay.
So it might be like a 5-minute clip. Just watch like the 5-minute clip when all the cameos happen. It was literally like the scene in Endgame. Like that's what it was.
On your
wrestling.
Left?
Yeah.
On
that's
your
what
left.
It was. That's what it was for wrestling.
I just saw it. The timeline was popping with WrestleMania stuff, and I was like, "Oh, okay." I thought I had my fill the night before, but it was still there. And apparently, The Undertaker of all people, and I say that like he doesn't show up at a WrestleMania every now and again for that type of pop. And The Rock has had a storyline, I guess, building up to this. And people are like, "Look," at some point, someone said his knee gave out. I don't know. So apparently, The Rock isn't as fit for WrestleMania or wrestling as he used to be.
He had a 12-month – or no, not 12-month, 12-week training camp for it. So.
Okay. But someone said
– of steroids. Which
yeah. The
which
training camp was
he did a
cycling?
Steroid cycle.
A cycle? Okay. I don't want – yeah. No wonder The Rock won't. Do you have to steroid test a president, a potential presidential candidate? Is that part of the deal?
I don't think so.
Because I know they have –
when would it have ever come up?
Yeah, well, exact. Well, yeah, because Arnold could never do it. I guess I don't know if that the steroid test the governor of California, but you know the presidents have to get physicals. Just a report. Look, he's fully healthy, even though he's really old, so probably not.
All these people are 75. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but they're completely healthy. But The Rock, HGH, in our president, I'd vote for him just for the med exam, just to find out what's in his system. What's in our president's
just
system?
See all the commas on his testosterone levels?
Yeah. But The Rock, making moves and sure getting paid a lot of money for that particular storyline.
Also, you had the
Cole, you had WrestleMania.
And then you had Coach Calipari leaving in the middle of the night to go
to Arkansas. Could you imagine that this was all set in motion because Andy Enfield left USC to go to SMU? That's how this all started?
The dominoes. Yeah, it's that and Jack Golke making 10 threes.
Yeah.
Like,
true.
Now all of a sudden Chris Beard is going to be the next Kentucky coach.
Yeah, if you missed it, John Calipari, all sources say he's going to be the next Arkansas head coach. It's not official, but it's official.
They're saying, like, in the process of finalizing a deal, which is,
which means John Calipari is leaving the University of Kentucky to coach at Arkansas, following Eric Musselman going out to USC. And he said the living out on the West Coast and going to the Big Ten all played a part in his decision. And I'm sure the money played a huge factor as well. So Eric Musselman's done a really good job at Arkansas. This year wasn't great. He's produced pros. They've been to Elite Eight, Sweet 16. So he's a guy who made Arkansas a winner again, and he cashed in by going to USC, who had Bronny James, and that was the big storyline. But they had a good recruiting class. It just didn't result in anything, though.
Yeah, they had another, like, five-star, like, Collier.
Yeah, Isaiah Collier.
Yeah, and they won, like, 12 games.
They stunk, and SMU was like, we want that guy as our coach.
Yeah, it is funny that it is, and we saw this a little bit in the college football coaching carousel, where it's like, the new move seems to be you have a disappointing year and you're on, like, the scorching hot seat of, like, well, the buyout's big, so we can't actually fire him this year, but we want to fire him. And then you just go, all right, then I will take a job at SMU. Or I will take a job. I will leave Kentucky for Arkansas, which is, like, obviously that's not a step up.
No,
but it's a basically restart the clock on how long it'll, because Calipari has been at Kentucky for 15 years.
Yeah, he's been there a long time.
If he has the career, so, like, there's a lot of, you know, think pieces and questions about, like, was Coach Calipari? I mean, I looked up and I saw it on First Take. Is Coach Calipari's tenure at Kentucky considered a success? Let me tell you, if he has the exact same tenure at Arkansas, he is one of the best. He's one of the best coaches of any sport in Arkansas history. So that's what he's doing. Is, hey, you know what? I'll just take what I'm doing here, take it to a whole bunch of people that will be grateful for one title in 15 years, and people will yell at me less.
I like to call it the Frank Haith. Who is an assistant on the Texas staff now.
Welcome.
He dipped from Miami, even though they wanted to fire him, but his buyout was at a point where they couldn't, because Miami wasn't going to do that to a head basketball coach. They weren't going to pay that type of salary or that money to get rid of him and then pay another guy in 2012. All of a sudden, in 2011, all of a sudden in an offseason, Frank Haith's going to Missouri. We're like, what? He's going to Missouri? Everyone was shocked and thrilled. And he did to Missouri, too. He left Missouri to go to Tulsa. He sent a text to the Missouri AD. Oh, by the way, I'm taking the Tulsa job. Everyone's like, great, but we didn't know you were leaving. So the Frank Haith is to leave before they fire you.
Yeah.
And Calipari, I don't know if he wasn't at a level where he would get fired, but the seat was hot. People weren't thrilled.
He had a meeting with the AD to discuss the future of Kentucky basketball. That's not good.
Yeah, it's not good when the future of Kentucky basketball is being discussed after you lose to a Jack Golke type. So, or just Jack Golke. That's who he lost to. So he saw, as you pointed out, there's a greener pastures, and they won't yell at me, and they'll be fine. Although Arkansas is going to have expectations. I told you, Eric Musselman's turned them into a program who expects things, and Calipari is going to have to deliver. But the initial shine of stealing a coach from Kentucky will help him quite a bit.
He has 2 or 3 years of just, like, gravy. And then he's got at the earliest, year four, it's like, oh, got to prove something, Cal. He's going to be good. But, yeah, I mean, it's a move that we saw Chip Kelly leave being a head coach at UCLA to be the offensive coordinator for Ohio State. We saw the Boston College head coach, whose name I forget, Jeff Hafley.
He went to go be the D.C.
Yeah, went to be the D.C. at in Green Bay.
Yeah.
So, like, there's – This is now the new move, it seems like, in college athletics, to just be like, you know what, before they fire me, let me just get out of here.
Yeah, Jeff Hafley he's finished up a 7-6 year. Now, what the expectations are at Boston College, who knows? They don't get enough talent to really win anything, but his overall record, because of a 3-9 in 2022, was 22-26. So maybe his agent went in there going, you want to give us a little extension? And they're like, no, have you seen your record? We're not paying you any more money. And then they realized it was time to go. So Jeff Hafley's
he also probably gets either a raise
more
or pretty close to a
Although
raise.
Although if I'm the shareholders with the Packers, I'm like, why are we so thrilled about Jeff Hafley? Yeah, why do we have to pay? And I say shareholders because we know they're not owned by anyone but the fans. But so why are we paying Jeff Hafley? Why are we thrilled by that move, LaFleur? But Jeff Hafley, he's been an assistant in the NFL before, so he has a track record there.
There you go. That's why you should be excited, shareholder.
Yeah, he's never been a DC on the NFL level. He was at most a co-DC at Ohio State. Why are we rushing to hire the former co-DC from Ohio State? They couldn't even give him the job by himself. Now we're making him our full-time DC after we got rid of Joe Barry finally. LaFleur might have a blind spot when it comes to defensive coordinators. We'll see. The Packers are certainly drafted for that defensive side of the ball, and it hasn't really lived up to their expectations. But we'll see, Jeff. But to Sean's point, you get out when you can. Don't fire me. I'll take a job before you do that. That's kind of the way of life. Always have that resume out. That's what I was taught.
Yeah, and it helps the, you know, I'm not a fired head coach. I left on my own volition. Yes. Because I believe in the good people of Fayetteville, Arkansas, that we're going to build a basketball contender.
Or
the one I could not build at Kentucky.
Instead of running my own program, yeah. I want to be the defensive coordinator in the NFL, and that's an easier sell. Because you could probably suggest that the defensive coordinator in Green Bay is a better job than the head coach at Boston College. Bill O'Brien would tell you that's wrong because that's now his job. Then we bring it all the way back to Bill O'Brien as we're way late for a break. We're way late. We will get to the Verlander stuff and what he said about what is happening to the arms in baseball, and we'll give you some of the numbers from his, let's just say, less than stellar start for the Space Cowboys, which you could have heard right here. Well, I say that. It's part of the overall Gal conglomerate, but it was on 92.5 that you could have heard the Space Cowboys and Justin Verlander start. He's due for a second start, too. So if you want to hear Verlander hopefully not get shelled by AAA hitters, you can listen to him on 92.5. We'll be back.
ESPN 97.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Del Olalea Show.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Now back to Del Olalea.
Welcome back. We are way short on time here because we just reviewed everything that happened late last night. So we went over there, but I did want to talk about this because I've mentioned it a couple of times. Justin Verlander had his first rehab start. And it was with the Space Cowboys. And according to him, it went well because he feels good. I mean, if you look at the numbers, it didn't. And, of course, it's baseball. So caveat, throw it in there that was he working on stuff? Was he trying to get people out? That's how you talk away the bad outing. And to be honest, you could lean on that. He is working on things. He's trying to get ready for the comeback to the big club, but I don't know. I would have preferred he got more guys out, but he was just trying stuff. I'm just working on things, and he had a 1-2-3 first inning, and then he gave up 5 runs in the second, throwing 29 pitches. He had a clean third, and then he got pulled in the fourth with guys on second and third and no one out. So he was every other inning. So was he working on things in the second and the fourth? And was trying to get guys out in the first and the third. I don't know, but it was a performance that says he's Justin Verlander. So why are we paying attention to this? As long as he comes out healthy, that's how you talk away things when they look like the way they did. But Justin Verlander was asked, and he had a lengthy after game press conference, if you want to call it that, with reporters. Because of course, he's going to get attention. He's out there pitching and making his way back to the rotation. But he was asked about the rash of injuries in Major League Baseball. A lot of big name guys are losing seasons to elbow injuries, Tommy John, and Justin Verlander was asked about it. And did he have an explanation for the rash of injuries?
I think it'd be easiest to sit here and blame the pitch clock. I think in reality, you put everything together, and everything has a little bit of influence. I think the biggest thing is the style of pitching has changed so much. Everybody's throwing as hard as they possibly can and spinning the ball as hard as they possibly can. And, you know, it's hard to deny those results, obviously. How can you – it's a double-edged sword. How can you tell somebody to go out there and not do that when they're capable of throwing 100? And you know, this young guy comes up and throws a pitch 95 and gives up a big homer, and everybody's like, what the hell, man? So something needs to change. I don't have all the answers.
He went on in that, but the gist of it was the way the game is played is leading to these things. You're asking guys to pitch a certain way, and that is why they are being injured. Lance was on earlier, and he discussed the strain it puts on a pitcher's arm when they're young. The way young pitchers are being treated is leading to that. So you heard Verlander talk about it's multiple reasons, but at least in his eyes, a big reason is, hey, they're asked to throw like this, and that is leading to the increase in elbow injuries. Tyler Glasnow talked about it, and he said this years ago now. He talked about the sticky stuff not being on the ball anymore is affecting the way the guys throw the baseballs, because if you feel these baseballs, they will put stress on a pitcher if they don't have the ability to use, what was it called, Sean? It was tack something. I forgot what the
spider tack.
They don't have the ability to use that to control their ability to throw the baseball. It just puts a strain on the elbow, and it's causing these injuries and the shoulder injury. So there are multiple guys who have a stake in the game putting it on different things, and you have Major League Baseball, at least the PA, saying it's a pitch clock. Is it really because you throw pitches? You have to throw pitches at a higher frequency that arm injuries are occurring? I don't know. There've been studies suggesting that's not the case, but Major League Baseball and the Players Association, at least the Players Association, is pushing the agenda that, hey, if you get rid of the pitch clock, these elbow injuries and shoulder injuries would decrease. And of course, these injuries were on the rise before the pitch clock, so that would be the response by Major League Baseball. Actually, you guys and your arms are falling off beforehand. You can't blame our rules. They were already happening. Either way, you're losing young pitchers, big-name pitchers, to these injuries, and it certainly has affected the quality of the game. And it's affected – now, we know baseball doesn't have a lot of stars, but when you're trying to market guys and guys who get guys out and they're going to be your all-stars and they're no longer available, it changes the game. And there's no clear answer, just multiple possible reasons for it. And I don't imagine Major League Baseball is going to say, you know what? This thing we put in place that has made the game more exciting and fans have reacted to it positively, we're going to take it out. I don't think it's happening. So arms will continue to fall off, Sean, and Major League Baseball is like, hey, if they die, they die.
I mean, like you said, like, it's been going up for a while.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. It is. I think it's the Players Association trying to carve out a reason to get rid of it because they're players don't like it, and they're using the pitch clock they're using arm injuries as an excuse, as opposed to the studies that suggest it was going on way before then.
Yeah.
And I get it. You want to finesse something? I understand the finesse, but you ain't fooling me. Science, and we're going to believe in science. The science says your arms are falling off long before the pitch clock became a thing. Just get up there and throw pitches faster. We're trying to get through these games, okay?
Yeah. Yeah, just take a little bit off of it, all right?
Yeah, stop. Yeah, Justin Verlander says stop trying to throw as hard. If I got to sit through 10-2 Astros, I don't need it to be 4.5 hours. Let's make it a smooth 245 so I can get through it when the Rangers are bashing the Astros' heads in. I don't need the absence of the pitch clock.
I don't care how fast it is, all right, Hunter Brown, just get this over with.
Yeah. You're not pitching well anyway. I don't need you to drag it out. Just get rid of this game. Who wants to sit through a 4.5 hour 10-2 beating for your favorite team? It's not enjoyable. Not that the 2.5 hour one was enjoyable either. Just that I'd rather have it happen quicker. That's all. In my misery, quicker, Hunter Brown, or just pitch better. One of the two. We'll see how it goes in your next outing from Valdez tonight as the Astros try to even up the series against, or well, close out the series with the win to even it up against the Texas Rangers. A Rangers team who I'm getting sick and tired of, because I always thought of them as losers, and now they're not anymore, and it's less fun. That'll wrap up Hour 1. We'll come back with something I think is a little disrespectful. It broke in the last hour, at least it came to my attention in the last hour, that a legend's number has been given away to a player who you wouldn't consider a legend. And when the guy might be the greatest player to ever play in your sport, giving it away to this guy might be deemed a little disrespectful. We'll talk about that when we come back.
ESPN 97.5.
I assumed you knew.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to five pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.